Hello, it's Josh, and hey, thank you for downloading this episode, but you're only getting half of the Zeitheist experience. Zeitheist is best experienced in video form because every episode has a unique component, like a comedy sketch, if you're about to hear that, or a short film, or a musical performance. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy crap on here, so please go to youtube.com and simply search for Zeitheist Podcast and give us a subscribe there to get the full Zeitheist experience. Okay, thank you. On to the show.
Hi, and welcome back. If you're just joining us, I've been speaking with the world's most beloved amphibian. You guessed it, it's Kermit the Frog. Now, Kermit, what started to happen after you had been experimenting with these practices for some time?
Yeah, well, you know, after my time in India with my guru, I was doing some pranayama back at home for a handful of months, you know, building up that shakti and retaining it in my system. After a while, you know, I noticed some pretty interesting things starting to happen. Like, I'd be sitting there meditating and all of a sudden my body is sort of convulsing and having these little shimmies and shakes, sort of like, sort of like that, you know, and also like, yeah, and so, you know, after you spend some time with that and get used to it, then things really get wild. Then the Ida and Pingala energies sort of weave their way up your spine and with Sushumna in the middle. And then when you get that real Kundalini energy flowing, things like this will happen. You know, kind of like that, and even, you know, very snake-like.
I mean, Kermit, that is textbook Kundalini arousal.
And the first time that Kundalini energy really hit me with full force, I was like,
Is that Miss Piggy?
No, it's not that trademarked character. It's sort of a deranged superfan that thinks Miss Piggy stole her life. She's been stalking me for a while now.
Okay, let's do a cut. Alan, could you get security on the pig? I don't think they have a day pass. It's kind of like a manic fan thing. I don't know, they need to, you know. Now, Kermit, I've heard a rumor that you can do a pretty fair Jordan Peterson impression. Is that true?
Well, obviously.
Right on the money.
Well, you know, when you start inviting chaos into your life, that stuff is no joke, man.
Hey, I'm Josh Gaines, and welcome to Zeitheist. Now, Zeitheist, just what the hell is that? Zeitheist is a program that takes a sincere and serious but playful, imaginative, creative look into the world of the occult, spirituality, meditation. What else you got? Throw it in there. Spiritual shit, astrology, I don't know. Throw in some paint, some art supplies, a bunch of your favorite stuff, an action figure. Take some crazy Funko Pops off the wall, throw them in there too. Shake it around, toss it on the floor. That's Zeitheist. Now today, we'll be talking with Cliff. We have a wonderful conversation all about the ins and outs of Enochian magic. Now, if you're not familiar with Enochian, oh, okay, you're familiar with Enochian. Oh, okay, wow. Wow, I'm a little thrown off my game here. Okay, John Dee was your great-grandfather. Okay, perfect, you know? I'm not sure that timeline matches up, but great, whatever. Queen Elizabeth was your freaking, aunt. Okay, great. Okay, you were born with the Tablet of Union in your freaking little chubby baby hand. Okay, great. Yeah. Oh, the Sigillum Day. Yeah. I used the Sigillum Day as my freaking skateboard as a kid. Okay, I guess you're the master of magic. I guess you already know all about this. I guess screw me. You do the show. No. No, seriously. No, I guess my whole thing, I guess this is whatever. I'm qualified to do the show, okay? I'm qualified to talk about magic in Enochian, okay? I have tarot cards. I'm a smart guy. I've read books. I have Angels in the Outfield on VHS. You really want to go down this road, buddy? You really want to come in my home and attack me when I got Angels in the Outfield on freaking VHS over here? Cliff and I have a wonderful and multifaceted conversation about many facets of magic, astrology, Enochian, and much more. I hope you find it enjoyable and informative. Here we go. Episode 2, Zeitheist. Zeitgeist? Now, what the hell is that?
Okay, so Jupiter and Pisces.
Yeah, well, it's Jupiter is happy in its home sign. And it has two home signs. It has two homes. Everything except the sun and moon has two homes in the zodiac. So what you're basically doing when you're trying to create the ecliptic, which is the path that the sun travels, you know, from the perspective of the earth, can be divided into like the 12 houses, of which Pisces is one. And it can, or 12 signs, excuse me. And then it can also be divided into 12 houses. So the idea is you're trying to say, okay, I'm going to try to make that sign stronger by aligning it with like one of the four angular houses. So that's what we picked today. We picked a time in which, you know, okay, we're going to make this, you know, benefic, the greater benefic, strong and prominent in the chart, at least from, you know, from where I am. I'm in Texas, so that should help out, you know, give a little bit of Jupiterian boundless energy today. So maybe that's what it'll be. And it kind of works too, because it's the eighth house, so it's other people's stuff from my perspective. So in this case, it's hilarious that, you know, you're an Aquarius, you mentioned that. So, you know, to you, the second house from that sun anyway is, you know, your stuff. So it's just kind of like opposite. So it kind of meshes out pretty well. So
we'll see.
Yeah. So what do you want to get into today or tonight?
Well, I'm curious, how does astrology inform your ritual, your magic timing, when you choose to do things? And when did that become a factor of your practice? Because I know you've been practicing for quite some time.
Yeah, it's... So I knew about planetary hours, and I kind of had a good introduction to modern astrology. Usually what people do is they'll go to like the first astrology website they find. Mine was astro.com. And so they give you like these nice interpretations from Robert Hand, for like a lot of their free stuff. And I had ordered a couple of reports as well. And I'm, you know, mainly to sort of see what was coming up and try to learn that. But I really started getting more into the planetary stuff via Scott Stenwick, who's just this amazing resource, very generous guy, and a Thelemite. And he has just lays out like kind of clockwork what you want to do if you want to call upon some of the more classic like Libra 777 spirits and intelligences. Mm-hmm. And so I had done a little bit of working with that, but he's always like, okay, you got to do this on this, if you're going to call on Mercury, you have to do that on a Wednesday. And if you're going to call Jupiter, you need to call on a Thursday. And it's like, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. But it's kind of like, anybody can be a good, a doctor could be like a general practitioner, but as you get more specialized, you need to learn like a little bit more and more and more nuances until finally, you know, if you're the expert in whatever field, and I'm definitely nowhere near that, but it's like you learn a little bit more, and there's different ways you can go in astrology. But at any rate, I wanted to make sure that I was, you know, I knew that I had some knowledge, but I started listening to the astrology podcast, I don't know, maybe like around 4 or 5 years ago. And I just kind of started doing the deep dives and listening, and I'm like, okay, this is more Hellenistic astrology, so let me listen to this. And so I just kind of picked that up. So usually if people are interested in it, I say, okay, first, listen to the significations of the houses episode, listen to the significations of the signs and the planets and all of that. Just go through those basic things. Because even though I had known a lot and I kind of understood it, it still helped deepen a lot and flesh out a lot of stuff that I didn't have quite as much knowledge in. So, but now that I kind of know that, I'm like, okay, well, clearly you want to kind of make something angular if you want to make that strong. But if you want to make like this evil influence or malefic or, you know, bad, you know, kind of, for lack of a better term, not evil is kind of, well, sometimes it can come off as so bad that it seems evil, but Sure. But if you want the malefics to be not as strong, okay, let's stick them in the cadent houses so they're not as strong, unless it's like one of these things, it's in their joy. So, you know, you kind of are going through this checklist in your head, just kind of like a doctor will go through a checklist if they're going to get somebody prepped for surgery. Let's say, okay, have they been abstaining from food and drink and stuff like that, and then for 24 hours, and then, you know, what's their, you know, you have all this knowledge and you're kind of going through this flow chart in your mind to make sure that you're trying to get things amplified as well as they can be. And I don't usually have that, but I'm just like, for this episode, I'm just like, oh, it's just starting out. This is like an early episode. Let's try to give it a big push and give it that Jupiter influence. So yes. I just trying stuff out. But yeah, when it comes to doing that, like if I'm going to call upon, I'm thinking about doing a Jupiter working, just because it's kind of the time for that. You know, I've done, mm-hmm. you know, Mercury workings for like healing and stuff like that for, you know, a few times. It may be time for that. So I'll probably, I think it's Jupiter is still in Pisces on Thursday. It may be the last day that day. So I'm thinking about doing that. What I'll do is I will do it on the day of Jupiter, so Thursday, and I'll do it during one of the planetary hours of Jupiter. Ideally, if I could, I would find a time in that planetary hour, if it's possible. I haven't even checked it yet. I'm just sort of on the fly thinking, well, maybe I should do that, you know, but mm-hmm. we'll see. You know, but I'll, if in that, I'll try to find a planetary hour in which Jupiter is kind of, in which basically the Jupiter's placement, like either Pisces would be on the midheaven, for example, or Pisces would be rising or short of that in the fourth or seventh house, something like that. So, that's kind of it's like I say, you kind of go through this checklist in your head and you're like, okay, yeah. what's the best way to get it, you know, take the full advantage of that. So, right. But that's probably what I'll do with Enochian, Binipur and Butmono on Thursday, maybe, I don't know, okay. Or I'll wait. You know,
yeah,
who knows?
That's interesting. I just got done doing a Jupiter working about a month ago, and I also, which was not the best timing.
You did magic on me, bruh. That's what this is. You got me thinking along those lines. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, so I had my first astrology reading ever about a month ago with Mickey Pellerano, who is such a sweet guy, and I really just connected to listening to him on Jason Lube's podcast, and I was like, this guy seems awesome. I'm gonna reach out to him. His teacher is Austin Kopic, whatever. So we had a great session, and but I told him about that, and he's like, Jupiter is in a fantastic place for you, but did you know your working was while it was in retrograde? And so I was like, no, I did not. And in my blissful ignorance, I mean, he was like, it's not the worst thing you could have done, but it's just maybe not the most poignant time to do so. But for some reason, well, I mean, for rather obvious reasons, leading up to that, it was just like the essence of Jupiter kept coming up for me. Mm-hmm. And I had read a book recently and just really responded to the sort of essence of Zadkiel, mm-hmm. and even the Olympic spirit Betor. And so I was just like, Jupiter, 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 it seems like I'm gonna do this. And that was interesting and still fruitful and seems to have gone well. It just revealed to me that, okay, I am new enough in these practices that it's just like, I just got the hang of, you know, Tree of Life and all the paths and working on tarot and Hebrew letters and all and banishing and all that. Mm-hmm. And astrology is such a big, complex world in and of itself.
Yeah.
With a lot to just memorize, like what's that house about? What's that? What's the characteristics of that sign?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, no, that's excellent. And I'll pick out that word fruitful. You know, that's very much a Jupiter kind of key significator. You know, the fruits. You know, the sometimes the harvest, although that tends to be more like Saturn. But that generativity principle, that mm-hmm. bearing of fruit, that's very much Jupiter. And it's funny that now you're kind of going back over stuff. So you'll find during retrogrades. And, you know, I probably, you know, yeah, if I had you know, my druthers, if I were to pick something, I would probably have to pick something with Jupiter in Sagittarius, just because of my chart. It's like, if I wanted exalted, well, that's in my 12th house, which is kind of crappy. And then the 8th house is also kind of bad, because it's just kind of complicated, but it doesn't make one like a 60 or 90 or 120 degree aspect or 180 degree aspect. So it's like, you're kind of thinking these things through. So I have to wait, you know, another, you know, 8-9 years before Jupiter hits Sagittarius again. But at any rate, you know, retrograde is one of the not quite as good kinds of things, but the fact that, like, right now we're going over like that kind of review idea, it's like one of the reasons Mercury in retrograde is so bad, it's because, like, you communicate something and then you have to, like, go back over that communication. And so there was something about the way it was communicated the first time, you know, it wasn't quite right. So you have to look back and there's all this confusion. And so with Jupiter, I kind of think of it like, well, okay, I started extending in this area, but let me it's kind of like walking across a stage. And then if you watch an actor walk across the stage, and you imagine, like, certain people, like, in a row, and if it's Venus, it would be like, you know, kissing this person and then this person, then being like, wait a minute, did I mean to kiss you? What about this person over here? Or if it's Mars, okay, I started fighting you. And then if he's working backwards, he's like, okay, maybe I don't feel like fighting right now. Maybe I don't like, okay, now you, I'm going to beat you up. So in Jupiter's case, it's like, I'm expanding here. I'm generating this way. And then it's like, well, maybe I want to go in this other direction, you know, have this other kind of look. So it's hilarious to me that this is sort of, it's like, okay, you know, like, you know, which way am I thinking about Jupiter? You know, it's like hilarious that exact signification is kind of coming up. The astrology itself is kind of working itself through your thing. So not the worst thing in the world, you know.
And it's time for the Jupiter working part 2.
That's right. See, that's
I don't know if I will, but it would make a certain kind of sense. Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely.
So I like to ask, what is something that has just caught your interest or been particularly interesting to you lately, maybe that you've recently learned about or read about, or what has caught your fancy?
Yeah. So lately, so this is okay, we're going to go right into this deep end here, but that's, I think, good. It'll be worth everybody's time. So I'm, you know, doing Enochian. I'll probably be known for that, you know, and even though my overall orientation is more Buddhist than anything else, but it was funny. So getting into the Enochian sort of came through in three stages. The first was like the Heptarchy, which is very, again, astrologically based. And then the next was this book called Liber Loga, or known mostly as that. It's actually, the actual title is Omzes Negeses Harde, but that's probably too hard for most people to say. So Liber Loga is much easier. And then the third one was the Watchtowers. So what I did was a working that I'm going to call it Jebafal, or it's kind of like Jebafal light is the name, it's taking that, it's the idea of this idea of doing a ritual related to that book.
Right.
And what I did is I basically tried to combine using an available text online that I've described in other podcasts, but basically trying to combine all three aspects of the Enochian system try to squeeze as much as I could and combine everything into one thing. And then the final day, I actually read the contents of the first leaf, which is something of a no-no, but I, you know, the angel said in God's time, it'll be, you know, it can be read. So I figured, well, maybe it's time. I don't know. Maybe it was arrogance. Who knows? But I had a very strong vision with that. And the interesting thing that I got was I got this sense of myself as this isomorphic figure. So it's not just like, you know, Cliff here in this body. It's also Cliff here at this other level, at this maybe more celestial level, or maybe only like one removed. So imagine like, you know, that we talk about the aethers, which are sort of like a stand-in for like the heavens, you know, the multiple heavens that you can be in. So if you can imagine that, The aethers are kind of like 30 of those. So imagine having your sense of yourself here on Earth, but also in each of those 30 heavens, but also at this entirely cosmic level, kind of getting into like something fairly psychedelic sounding, right? But sure. Having that sense of yourself all at once. So pretty cool, right? So the funny thing about that is it felt like using like the Christian paradigm and the idea of great chain of being, where there's God at the top, then angels, then humans, then animal, and so on down the line to vegetable and mineral. I have had something of an insight since then. It's sort of like all these pieces are starting to fit together, and it's like my perspective is starting to configure itself into like this decent focus. It's sort of like a self-assembling telescope, to give a decent analogy. So put a pin in that idea of that Jebefal, that sense of self, isomorphic, multiple levels of reality all at once. Sure. So that's the first thing. Combine that with this idea of a Buddhist kind of clear mind, right? Where if you strip away all these layers of egotistical thinking, or you go from one end when it seems very egotistical, right? And a very big inflated ego. But if you sort of strip this mind, that's kind of the monkey mind going this way and that way, there's just this sense of clear. I've seen it referred to as the luminous mind or the clear light mind, something like that. And I'm making this horizontal gesture with my hands for people who can't see this at home. It's like I'm doing wax on, wax off from the original Karate Kid. That was the sense I got. It's like reality sort of has that that very pure, infinite sort of plane. That extends off into infinity, and that it itself is sort of undisturbed by all these little, weird thoughts that the individuals have. It's just fine. So that's part two. So we've got this vertical idea and we've got this horizontal idea. Mm-hmm. And then again, just traveling down this, re-upping the Buddhist, intake of my podcast, I was listening to the Bodhi Heart podcast with Kenpo, or excuse me, I'm forgetting his name. Sangpo Sherab Kenpo, I think is his name. I'm butchering his name, so I apologize. But you search for Bodhi Heart, you can find it. Anyway, he was going over the 8 verses of Training the Mind by Langri Thangpa. So. And in his commentary on this, this seems more disrespectful for me forgetting the guy's name than I intended to be, so I apologize for that. But he was talking about how the sense of like everybody, all sentient beings suffer, right? Right. And this is like, well, duh, that's kind of one of the Four Noble Truths. We all kind of know that, the reality is like filled with suffering. So I had this realization. He was going into detail about that. And I realized, okay, wait a minute. So anybody who I've ever met in the past, and I'm pointing backwards behind me, imagine we talk about life being a path that you follow, whatever. So, sure. Behind you on the path versus in front of you on the path, everybody that you meet on that path, every animal, with whatever degree of sentience with this logic is having this idea. So it doesn't matter how high up the chain or how down low on the chain, there's this level of suffering, right? So you get this, so this forward, backward, I'm kind of equating to future past and then up and down this chain of being. But also even in this present moment, people to your sides who you may not be able to see because it's, not directly in front of you or you not following the path, but everyone, sort of in parallel to you is having the same experience. And so what I guess the thing that I've taken away from this is just how profound of an idea that is and what you need to do with your heart moment to moment to sort of accept the profundity of that statement of how every sentient being past, present, future, you know, whether you're aware of them or not, whether they're high above you on the chain, more in power or perspective, or way down below you on whatever chain, however you want to do that, they are all suffering. And that was very much a sense I got on that day 49 of that ritual. The last day was that God himself is suffering, you know, this cosmic sense of this aching. But on the flip side of that, it's like, by doing that, you're sort of cultivating in yourself this sense of the opposite of, okay, the reason why Buddhism works for me so much anyway, is that this knowledge of suffering allows this great amount of compassion. So anyway, yeah. to answer your question, the thing that I'm diving into is trying to do the work on the heart and being kind of aware of this level of suffering. And I have to say, you know, just going through those steps, I've come to realize, okay, I'm feeling and I'm acting. It's like these egotistical thoughts. And I'm 42. I've been like working through this stuff for a long time. It's still that, like, the absolute depth of like calm that I have had as a result of this, and not tending to go in these strange directions where you get petty or annoyed by one thing or another. I mean, that's something that I've had to sort of actively clamp down on, because, you know, I've got, you know, speaking of astrology, I've got a Mars in Aries, you know, natally, but the level of how much that is sort of like evened out has been very profound. And it's just like, you know, all these teachings from all this time have like come together and just like really just chilled me out. And it's like, but only by going through that and having that level of that going, for me anyway, only going through that and working that path, that's the only way it would have been possible. So that's what's going on. So
that's marvelous. like a refining, or not like a, but pretty much a refining of the soul or spirit, or of this facet of the divine that is Cliff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That made me curious, how has it influenced the way that you look at other people, treat nature, like interact with animals, or even, I mean, some people, when they kind of land upon non-duality, find that they can't eat animals anymore, or things like that, or they're just much more compassionate towards people. How has that affected you?
Yeah. Well, there have been times when I've gone vegetarian and times when I've gone off of it. I really make an effort to eat as little meat as possible. Mm-hmm. I do think that the human body to some extent might need some of those proteins. You know, and you can get supplements and do all that. But, for right now, I'm really trying to minimize the amount of meat that I have. But yeah, it's, if you can go through your day and have the motivation to, you know, thank an animal that you've eaten, that's something that I think is pretty, that sort of, in a lot of ways, I mean, the animal has already passed away, but sort of reflecting that consciousness. But yeah, to answer that question, I mean, it's not something, it's something that I really am trying to make that move towards vegetarianism again. It's not always easy, but I think I'm managing pretty well. We do have like leftover soup that I'm still eating, you know, that, you know, chicken noodle or whatever, but
sure. I didn't mean to put you on the spot for an issue there.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. And you know, I'm waiting, but you get to handle all the pita letters. No, I'm just kidding.
Sure.
It's something I do think that it's important, and it's important for the planet and all of that. I think I take it seriously, and it's something that, you know, I've had times in my life. There was an 8-year stint, you know, in my past where I was vegetarian, and then grad school came, and it was just like not going to happen. So, just because of the amount, the availability and ability to go and get that. And I, you know, you work at it, you know, that's all I can say.
Sure.
But yeah,
it made me think, as you were talking, of, during an operation of evoking Archangel Gabriel. Not that I did, but in a book that I read, one of the things that Gabriel had to say was, when it comes to all living entities, to annihilate your hierarchy, that from the smallest gnat to the most self-important billionaire, like, people are absolutely level, like that horizontal space you were saying, which is, I mean, it's like, it's easy to cognitively recognize that, and a very different thing to put it to practice. And, you know, especially when you're in traffic or dealing with all different kinds of personalities, it's easy to be an asshole and be like, ah, wait, but I'm supposed to be this liberated person who's like not contributing to more suffering. And I just did.
So that just makes you human, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's harder to do that when the habit that comes to your mind, you know, that's why it's 8 verses of training the mind. When the habit you get yourself into is, this person who I'm mad at is suffering. It's like, wait, how can I be mad at somebody who's suffering? And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. So it's like, boy, I got to do this again. Okay. I'll learn that lesson again.
Right. Back to Libra Logoth and the Jebafal working. So I don't actually know, when you've got this book that you've finished, is the ritual itself just making the book, or do you read this and you get an experience? Do you do other ritual around it? Can you read the book?
There's what is right for other people, and then what I decided to do for myself. Sure. So I'll have that massive caveat at the beginning. Therefore, everything I say is okay, right? Because I just did it for me.
Certainly.
But yeah, I would say that if you're gonna try to replicate the sort of process that Dean Kelly had to do. So Enochian, you know, we kind of talked about how it came through, but it was Dee and Kelly, right? John Dee and Edward Kelly. And they had to make this book, and they got this big transmission, and then they just sat on it like for a year, and they kept on calling the angels and asking him this or that. And the angels kept on like reminding them, hey, you need to make another copy of this book. You need to make a perfected copy of this book, which meant transliterating all the letters and stuff like that, and also then reversing the order of the letters, which is a little bit, it's going to be more challenging to me. I'm actually going through the process all over again. I did the hand version, that so where I actually drew out the grid lines and all of that, and then transliterated and went backward, you know, reversed the order and all of that. But so yeah, that's kind of like the first step. And that part took me 7.5 months, roughly. And I kind of joked on a previous podcast, they were supposed to get it done in 40 days. And I was thinking, well, maybe 40 24-hour days is how much time I spent on it. That maybe that's roughly the same amount, you know, working at as fast a clip as I could without making mistakes and using plenty of whiteout as I did find mistakes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, Dean Kelly did not have that. Not that I know of, anyway. Maybe they had magical whiteout. I don't know. Yeah. But at any rate, so that's the first step for sure. I would say that definitely you have to do that. You know, but that being said, one of the things that Lon Milo Duquette has in his Enochian Vision Magic, which I recommend to everybody, is that he talks about, well, you know, you may not be able to make, you know, the gold ring because you don't have the money, or you're not a smith and you don't have the raw gold, but, you know, you can always make a paper ring which is printed out in gold color. And that's a good enough substitute just kind of to get started. And as you kind of go along and you happen to have a windfall here or there, you can start slowly building up the furniture, but don't let that be an excuse not to start. So all of that being said, one of the reasons I'm going through this whole process again, I'm doing it again in Excel, because what I want to do is create a version that we kind of have a version of that, on the condor.de website. Stefan Clement, and I'm forgetting his last, or Clemenk, and I'm forgetting his last name. But anyway, Stefan Neil Clemenk, I think, that's his site, but he has it all in English letters. And so I'm trying to do the same thing in Excel so that you have the English letters on one part of the page, and then you have the Enochian reversed, you know, and you can do all this with formulas now. It's not as hard to do compared to back in the day. You just have the formula, copy the same kind of formula, so it's going to automatically transliterate it, transpose it, and everything like that, and you just apply the Enochian font to it. So all of this is to say that I'm trying to make it easier for people to do this kind of work and to study it. Mm-hmm. That's my goal, is to make it as open source as possible, so that, you know, I'll just add this to the list of things. So I'll put it up on my blog whenever it's done. I'm nearing about halfway done, even though I'm on leaf 22, even though there are 49 leaves, but the rest, a good chunk of them are only every other letter, and it's so complicated. But the reason it took me 7.5 months, just so everybody knows, is that you're basically creating a 49x49 grid, which is, you know, the nightmare version of Battleship, I like to joke about, you know, where you have to get, you know, each letter right, and you have to, you know, make sure you don't make a transposition error or you get off by a row or anything like that. So yes, make the book, and there are instructions that go with that. So it needs to, I think it needed to be virgin paper, and I had to, like, do, you know, if I messed something up, then, you know, badly, or if I got something off, I'd already written something else on it, then it's like, nope, I didn't count that. If I made a transcription error, it's like, well, you know, that's kind of different. It was an intent to continue to do that. But so long story short, you make 49 pages of this front and back, each of them more or less with that same kind of table. So yeah, you need to do that, covered in blue silk, have the title that I mentioned in gold on front. So I used gold leaf and gold paint because the gold leaf was kind of janky.
Sure. Tough to work with. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. It's like, oh, I did my best, but sorry, angels.
right.
But so yeah, that's the first part. But the other part that I had read is again from this manuscript on Aaron Leach's website, was a using that in conjunction with the calls. And, you know, so basically every day, you know, there are 48 calls plus the 49th call is either silence. I think it's probably the contents of leaf one, but I don't know for sure. That's one of the reasons why I read off of that on the last day. But the idea is to, like, read each of the calls kind of associated with one of the leaves. And there are varying opinions apparently on that. But yeah, so I combined, like, the calls, which came along with the watchtowers in the third part of the system. Mm-hmm. And the heptarchy is seven. So you have seven kings and seven princes and all that, but mainly the kings. And so that means that you can line that up with each day of a 49-day ritual, each day of the week. So each time you're going to call each king seven times. And, you know, then you go through that process of kind of trying to do both. And then for the last 30 calls are the calls to the aethers. So I'd already scryed all of the aethers previously. So this was sort of like a rescrying. That was like juicing it up to an 11. It was whoa, this is way more powerful. And oh, by the way, this vision that of Babylon that you usually only have, you know, at the Aether of Zip, I'm already having like previews of this, like way earlier. Like, what is this? So
is there new information in each Aether or new phenomena, so to speak? Okay.
Yeah, it was stronger. It was, which is not to say, like, it's tough because there's this idea in psychology of like a hedonic treadmill. So if you're happy about something, then you suddenly become less satisfied over time because it's like, well, I have this house, but now I want a mansion, or I have this and therefore I want more.
Yep.
So it's kind of like that. It's kind of like, okay, well, I had the vision of the aether. So now it's like, well, you know, even though I objectively, I know I'm getting way more, it took me, it's like your body's, your system is already attuned to, you're less likely to be blown away, let's say. You know, it's like you're a kid, you're watching Wizard of Oz for the first time. That's the best thing ever. And nowadays we have like Avengers Endgame. It's like, that's the best thing ever. You know, but it's because you're more aware, I guess, or you're expecting more almost. We always want Hollywood to top itself. So anyway, I did feel like the Aethers, these visions of the Aethers were definitely stronger. They were more kind of interrelated. The other thing that happened too, and that definitely didn't happen the first time I scried the Aethers, was that as I went along, and keep in mind, I also did like the first 19 calls separately, you know, after the calls to the Aethers. The other thing I was getting was I started getting more and more insights into like the math and the astrology of the system. And this is like, this was the hard part, because basically the routine was I would do a prayer to Enoch, as related by the angel Ave in the D diaries. And I would do that three times a day. Then I would do the call. And usually the call would be accompanied by a separate call to the king for that day. I think I'm pretty sure I did that every day. And this is why I wrote it all down, because it was just like so much that I had to go through. So anyway, I would do that three times a day. And then at the end of the day, I would like finish the blog post, because I wanted it done and fresh right there. So we're talking like 5 hours out of the day, plus, you know, full-time job, plus all the other responsibilities. So it was rough. But it was so worth it. And at any rate, but what would happen as I went along was I would get some of these like mathematical insights. And one of them, just for as a quick example, is like the weird kind of number of servient angels that show up associated with the zodiacal kings, which is this other level, each of them associated. They showed up, and basically what I found was like there are these massively large numbers in the Aethers themselves, or in the calls themselves. So like one big example is 69,636, right? Now that's just not, that's like a number, it's like, oh well, that's a rather specific number. And I was like, what's going on with this? And so what I did was I'm like, well, let me try, you ever try to do this, you know, you try to, if you take a like a large list of numbers and you just try to do this through trial and error, like through some large numbers, try to add them up. It's what's known as the subset sum problem, where you're trying to create a sum from a subset of a larger set and see if it matches this thing. Sure. It's almost impossible to do through trial and error. So what I did, you know, as a lowly human. So instead I had my magnificent higher in the chain of being, being known as my computer, do that, right, in Excel. And Excel, it turns out, is much slower than the Linux version of that, LibreCalc. So when I switched over to that, I said, I'm using my Linux computer for this. So that wound up being a good investment. But anyway, what I found was that of those large, like 1,000 plus numbers, that are in the calls, which is about, there are 10 of them that I identified. I may have missed one, but there are 10 of those. Exactly half of those have numbers that are exact sums of these servient angels that are associated with the zodiacal kings. Ooh. This is very inside baseball, but the point is like, when people like, I'm absolutely convinced that you cannot just say this is something that Edward Kelly made up to con D, or that D just made up to do it, because, you know, I'm pretty good at math, and even if you're like one of these human calculators, to be able to set up in advance these extra large numbers and these angels that are in this that are associated with these large numbers of servient angels that are in this in the Aethers, and also have those numbers themselves have the placement of those angels and those kings in this. You have to kind of like read the blog post to kind of get the idea here of like the intensity of this. Like there is just not a way, like it strains credulity. Right. It's like this, it's like, oh, he has, it's like all this stuff. Oh, and by the way, this is kind of like a very similar to a language. And oh, by the way, and it's like, you're talking about somebody who's like, would have to be the smartest person of all time and also has all these very special, like human calculator kind of gifts that are, that we know are rare. So, sure. Anyway, that was a long way of getting into saying that's what it was like. And so I went through each of the calls, and then it was just mind blowing. So anyway, I've kind of rambled on for a good 10 minutes.
There. That's fascinating. What do you think is implicated by why are you being pointed to these particular angels, and what do the Enochian angels want you to do with that information? So.
Well, probably partly what I mentioned, that just realizing the complexity and knowing that it's basically like this is adding to the proof to the skeptics, right? Mm. Like if you're a skeptic and you think this is all just, you know, BS coming up, that somebody came up with because he was a really good con man. Me pointing out the mathematical relationships like this, it makes it. Somebody would have to face the reality of that. And for the people, usually it's the people who are like really good at math. And so they like the idea of order and structure, yeah. Pointing them and showing that this is why you need to be skeptical of this idea that this was just made up, because sure. it does not match up. You know, I don't think that a couple of, you know, proto-Renaissance or, you know, early Renaissance figures, you know, who are basically heavily steeped in medieval, you know, philosophy and mathematics are even capable of doing that, yeah. On their own. So I think that's what the angels wanted to show me. In addition to that, other stuff that came up, which was like the weird frequency, I should say, of the zodiacal kings as they appear in the aethers. So, for example, the zodiacal king for the sign of Pisces shows up 15 times, but the one for Aries only shows up 5 times. Well, that's kind of weird. So, finding out that as a whole, they wind up that if you take the astrology, if you know something about astrology and you say, well, by domicile and exaltation, suddenly this means that each of these planets would then have to be, would have their sign of domicile or exaltation represented 144 mm-hmm. times. Well, that's a pretty interesting relationship, right?
Yes.
Because that's 12 times 12, you know, number of signs of zodiac times itself, but also that's 144 is the reverse of 441, which is very important to the Enochian system, because that's 21 times 21. The angels are always talking about last shall be first shall be last. So you have these two very unique square numbers that themselves, their square roots are also mirrors of each other. So it's stuff like that. It's just like, you know, I think, you know, the angels found, you know, I was fortunate to be in a position to be able to, you know, have studied this astrology at the right time. And I'm sure there are other people who have the same knowledge base, but just it all kind of came together that either stuff occurred to me, or more likely the angels started, you know, tuning me to a frequency and or just putting input into my brain. I don't know how this stuff works.
Right.
So it was, but I think that's what that was the purpose.
Sure. I can see how that would be like a little one among many breadcrumbs that someone in modern science, that it would get them to take a second look, someone who's a skeptic and is like, magic isn't real. Mm-hmm. So that's fascinating that the angels are perhaps trying to widen the scope of who is aware of this and its legitimacy.
Yeah. I challenge anybody, you know, to really take a look at the math, you know, and just take a look at the charts, you know, do the research, you know. This is all available from Aaron Leach's Essentially Enochian Grimoire, and you just need a little bit of basic background in the idea of domicile and exaltation. And if you do the math on that, I defy them to explain to me how a couple of, you know, early Renaissance figures who are working this magical system, even with Dee being as brilliant as he was, I didn't see him make a reference to this, but I just happened to be like steeped enough of it in the right time to be able to do that. But who knows? I mean, this could also have been in like some later Dee diaries that were lost. So,
sure.
And we do know that some of those were burned.
Right. I am curious. There seems to be a cost, so to speak, upon one's personal life for entering into this. I've picked up on enough of a pattern that it's like, it seems when people have scried all the aethers, their life kind of goes to shit for a year or two before it levels out. Would you say that is true? And if it did anything of that sort happen to you, and what's your take on that?
Yeah. So I'll mention two different times that I've scried the aethers. So this most recent one, and then the one before. So the first time I scried the aethers, when I got to Zax, that one, or as I was approaching Zax with the aether of Eek, that one was difficult, and I could definitely feel like, you know, Jason Louv, he talks about it, like, you know, you have to undo Hal, like in 2001 A Space Odyssey, you have to just slowly take apart, and he starts singing, Daisy, Daisy, you know, give me your answer to all that. But you have to deconstruct the rational mind. And I definitely was, there was a time where I was a little bit loopy. That was right around my birthday that happened. But after, I realized after a little bit what that was doing, because the vision right after that, after Zax, is the one of Zip. And that is when Babylon appears. And that was really difficult. That it's like, what is, you know, what? It's like, I say these words after having built all this furniture, and then suddenly this vision of the goddess appears. And, you know, by the way, it also happens to match what at the time I noted that it was just like Shakti. And then I felt very good when I looked into like Libra 7-7. It's like, you go to that line for Bina, and there's Shakti. She's one of the Hindu goddesses. She's the main Hindu goddess associated with that. But yeah, there was a time in which I was pretty loopy. Now, this time, I did not have that same personality breakdown, but there were a couple of things that did happen that were not fun. Mm-hmm. One of which was I was out weeding, and I was pulling on this vine, and this vine, I was pulling on it, and it just happened to like, just through chance, and I foolishly did it without, you know, any eye protection on, and went and it like whacked the side of my right eye, and I'm like, oh crap, I'm gonna have to do that. So that was the day of Zax for this Jebafal working. So the more recent one, I'm like, you son of a bitch, Coronzon, you did this to me. I'm more or less okay, I think. I do notice that film tends to build up on that eye now, so I do actually wash it out more often, and that seems to like fix any vision issues, but it does seem to like there's something weird going on with the eye. So I don't know what to tell you with that. But then on the next day, that morning before I had I scried the one for Zip, that day of Zax, or maybe just the day prior to even that, I'm trying to remember when that was, I got my second COVID vaccination. Mm-hmm. And that morning I came very, very close to throwing up as a result of the side effects of that. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, whoa, with that, because, you know, I tend to do the opposite of what I'm supposed to do when I'm cold. Or when I have a fever, I won't like cool myself down. I like want to take a hot bath. And at any rate, it was pretty bad. But then, like, I think it was that day. I'm trying to remember. But at any rate, I could feel an intervention from Babylon herself and saying, no, you're not going to happen. So even though when I throw up, you know, this is a great podcast listening. when that happens with me, I tend to get like the sweat on my scalp as like the final thing before the actual act. And I had the sweat in my scalp, but it didn't happen. And so it was just like, okay, this is like kind of going counter to that. So that sort of, so I would say, No. And yes, at the same time, like you have to be willing to let go of like this idea of this narrative that you've built up around yourself. And you need to, and that sounds like so simple, but it really is not, because that's literally the kind of thought that you've been having your entire life. And that's the only way I know how to describe it. And instead, you need to be willing to listen to the more cosmic message that's trying to come through, and that's trying to build a signal to your mind about this is what's actually going on. So I can see why it could be difficult for some folks, especially if they don't scry all of the aethers. But I would say that, that would be a difficulty there. Now, that's not to say that you don't sacrifice a lot doing Enochian, because you do. But you sacrifice a lot to go to church every week. You know, if you're just, let's say, a more common kind of Christian, let's say, or you sacrifice a lot to. I mean, we talk about billionaires going to space, right? They sacrifice all their time and their effort and energy and ordering people around and this and that so that they can go into space, you know, for like 5 minutes or whatever the case may be. You know, I hope it was worth it, dude.
Right.
But at any rate, so you have to make choices, right? And some, it's difficult. I'm at the age now where I can afford to get away with that sort of thing more. Because you're more established at this age. But when you're younger, it's just like, oh, I just need to pay the rent, or I need to do this or that. But that's part of the reason why, you know, I'm trying to make a lot of this stuff printable for that. But yeah, I did. I would say not necessarily that everything is going to go badly. I know that in the last year, I was awarded a patent. So which is, you know, a nice kind of little feather in your cap and all that. But, and that's fine. And you know, I'm proud of the work that I did for that, but all of that sort of was happening kind of contemporaneously, or I was trying to massage that through while I was also doing Holy Guardian Angel work in 2017, 2018, and then 2019 is when I made the switch to Enochian, and I'm still not done with it. I'm hoping that, you know, I'm not hoping to be done with Enochian, but I'm hoping to have the major portions done so I can get back into a more regular meditation practice, because that's kind of what I need to be doing. But at any rate, that was a very long answer to a simple question.
No, that's helpful. That doesn't sound too terribly bad. That doesn't sound a crossing the abyss, loss of job, loss of everything sort of implications that can happen. Yeah. Don't always.
Yeah, I would say that's, if that happens, then, you know, try to fall back. I mean, I was very close to that. But I would say, you know, try to fall back and on your meditation practice, but keep going with the aethers. And that was the advice Jason Louvre gave me during office hours. So I was glad. I was very grateful to that advice, or to him for that advice.
Something that I picked up from you on, I believe it was just one of the Discord group calls, that a recent discovery was around this number 19 being the square root of 360. And that struck me because for whatever reason, the number 19 has been in my life for a long time, and I see it constantly. The one and only time that I've done psychedelic mushrooms in a cabin in the woods on my 30th birthday with some friends when I knew nothing about magic, the one visual phenomena that I saw was a gigantic serpent's head. And didn't know what that was at the time. In my evangelical Christian framework, I thought it was the Satan serpent, you know, but it didn't feel evil or bad, and I wasn't scared of it. It was pretty fascinating. And there's this number 19 that's been prevalent since like age 15, 16, so half my life or more. And then as I, you know, magic is, I get into it, it's revealing itself in various ways. Maybe this is just a simple synchronicity, but it's like the 19th path between Geburah and Hesed is, you know, the lust card, but it's also serpent. 19th path and serpent. And so that just, I was like, I saw a snake and 19 means a lot to me. That's an interesting path for me. And it's the lust card. That's Babylon. So just an interesting little connection there. But yeah, the 19 being a square root of 360, that was an interesting find.
Yeah. Yeah. It's technically the square root of 361, but you can say, well, number of degrees of the circle plus the center. Or, you know, that's kind of the way I kind of view that. But yeah, that's that the geometry along with that. It's funny, like the way the angels sort of presented it to me, because I'm pretty sure this one was more of a download. They use this phrase by rounding, you know, and so that's, you'll notice in the blog post related to that, that I italicize that word, you know, to sort of get. But yeah, that's something that's been associated with astrology for a while. So the best and clearest example of that is the exaltation degree of the sun is 19 degrees of Aries, and the rationale for that was because that's the square root of 360, and they actually, you know, if you want to get real technical, it's slightly earlier on account of the it being 18 point whatever, but they rounded off to 19. But yeah, that's something that you know, the square root, you know, the whole idea of squaring the circle and trying to do that. And I made a few geometry posts, I think, or numerical and or geometric posts during the Jebefal ritual. And yeah, I mean, it's something that comes up over and over again. So there's the 19 calls that are not related to the aethers versus the 30 that are, which is kind of similar to, again, the zodiac, you know, squaring, you know, if you want to square the circle or take the square root of the circle, then you get to 19 that way via the number of degrees. But there's also then the 30 degrees that go with each sign of the zodiac. So I kind of have tried to lay out as best I can a lot of these posts, that idea of, okay, where do these numbers happen? But yeah, if you're finding that, I mean, that's a pretty strong one. And yeah, I've noticed it in the leaves of Libra Loca. It's kind of too much to get into in terms of that. But yeah, I would say follow that. I know that I think Crowley related that to manifestation. And I've tried to find which Hebrew word he was talking about that he said that manifestation is related to the number 19. And he sort of associated abracadabra with that, or abrahadabra, right. It was his word. So I've tried to find that. I don't know where it is. But that was the word that was the number that he was very much taken with. So, yeah, keep looking into that.
Yeah. I certainly took it as just like I try to be careful not to attribute more value to those things than they deserve, but still it was just an implication to like pay attention, keep going, notice when it comes up. Yeah. Pardon me if this is an amateur question, but do the Hebrew letters correlate whatsoever to the Enochian system? Are they related at all or interconnected?
Yeah. So, the answer I think is I don't think so.
Okay.
The linguists who have taken a look at this have seen, well, this probably is, you know, this is definitely not a Proto-Hebrew language, and the letters, I'm just sort of going through them in my mind right now. They don't really line up. But that being said, it's kind of interesting looking at a lot of the individual words and finding. Like Londo is a as well as Elzaptilb, those would be two words that would be very important to D because they sound so much like London and Elizabeth, you know, the first whom he served. Mm-hmm. But there's also I'm trying to think of other examples here, but there are other words that sort of seem more like Greek. Some of them seem like Hebrew. For example, the name for God is Yad, or, you know, which is very close to Yah, or of the first half of Yahweh, you know, which is, you know, the God of the Old Testament. and just a lot of like little like kind of crossovers. So it's almost like it's you know that phrase of barbarous words and how they seem to have this power and nobody knows sure. why. It's yep. kind of like they took like these they took these and then meshed it. No, it's more like, well, maybe the words were already there and it's just the who knows, right? But the language seems to have these. It itself is very powerful to just if you vibrate it, you know.
Yes.
It does. Like I have some degree of clairaudience, at least when it comes to vibrating and hearing the magical sound of something, which is kind of a fancy way of saying I hear like this extra warbling sound effect that goes along with that, for lack of a better term. I've tried to say I've tried to describe what it sounds like. It sounds like breaking glass, but not as shattering in its sound, but still kind of like it's kind of weird to describe, you know, if you're not, if somebody, but somebody else on the server, I'll name it offline, if you know, just so I don't out him, but it was the first time he had done the LBRP. I'm like, oh, you mean it kind of sounds like a liquid breaking glass sound? He's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's what it sounds like. That, why do you think I've been obsessed with magic for 20 wow. plus years?
Yeah.
But at any rate, I'm bringing all of that sort of sound up in order to say that I get that effect way kind of easier by vibrating Enochian than I do. Like, I can sort of like push that point with a certain word, English word, but you just it's hard to describe, but you know, you can vibrate a word and it's like by focusing your attention on that, I can get that same kind of effect to come through, but I have to like repeat it like, you know, several times, like maybe up to, you know, 10 to 12 times. But Enochian, it's like right there, you know, you just started out that first word, and then probably by the second word, I'm hearing that effect again, you know, just, and not really making a whole lot of energetic effort, you know, and by that I'm talking like subtle body energy. I'm not trying to like focus my attention in that same way. It's just like right there. It's crazy. Like it's like I gotta say, like Enochian is one of those things, like it's you do the upfront work for it, but then like all these other things, it's like way more powerful and kind of like way too easy. It's like, it's like, you know, you teach somebody to drive, like, I don't know, like, you know, little crummy, you know, 1988 Ford Tempo, you know, or whatever the case may be, and versus, you know, giving them a Ferrari, right? And as long as they're safe, you know, they won't, as long as they're careful, they won't crash, you know, that's what kind of the furniture is about. But man, it's way too easy to like just like, whoa, I didn't know I could go this fast with this thing. It's kind of, that's kind of what it's like with Enochian. It's like there was something very unique that transpired between Dee and Kelly. And we're all the better for it.
I'm sure this has been speculated upon, but if you had to give your thoughts, why do you think they didn't go through with Libra Logoth? Were they, I know they were low on money.
Well, first of all, it's one of the rare moments of miscommunication. Haha. No, actually there was a lot of miscommunication between, because it's humans trying to talk to angels, right? But part of it is, but the main miscommunication was that basically they thought that the angels were going to finish that work for them. And they didn't realize that it was the Angel of Wisdom who was like communicating. And oh, by the way, that should be a pretty clear clue that you'd be wise to listen to what the angels have already told you, which is to say, do that. Apparently they did. There's not really a record of it, but my guess is that D pulled a whole bunch of all-nighters, you know, using whatever the local apothecary could, you know, give him. And he did wind up finishing it. It was in August. It wasn't the August that they were supposed to do it, but it was by the next August. And the angel's like, okay, you did finish this book and you did finally do it. So now we're going to give you the aethers and we're going to give you the watchtowers and stuff like that. Gotcha. And that was the idea of that was actually kind of the booby prize. you know, it was not the big thing that they were supposed to get, but that they were like, well, we'll give you this because, you know, God is at least pleased that you finally did it. But because you didn't do it in the time frame we said, you're only going to get this. And they're, you know, they probably just were like, oh, crud. But so as far as why they didn't do that, I mean, there's a miscommunication, like I mentioned, and also you can't blame D for being focused on politics at hand, right? Like he's thinking British Empire. He's thinking, you know, okay, I gotta, and he does wind up changing his tune and try to be something of an evangelist for the system. And of course, Kelly, he wants money, and D also wanted money. You know, they both, you know, they both had worldly concerns. I mean,
sure.
D had, like, you know, at the end of the day, he had what, 8 children and possibly a 9th by Edward Kelly during that whole spouse swapping episode. So, or however many, it was very large number.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think I give them both a pass. You know, they got us to where we are now. So,
yeah.
You know, I'll forgive them.
Sure. Is it possible that there is yet another facet of Enochian yet to be unlocked by the angels that hasn't been discovered or given yet? Or is it a complete system as it is?
So part of the reason I did Jebafal was to see, because it was supposed to be like an opening of the 49 gates of wisdom. And, you know, so, okay, well, is D's wisdom my wisdom? Right? Or do you know, is the wisdom of a child the same as the wisdom of an old person? Both of them have a different kind of wisdom, you know, if you think about it, right? They can come up with different ways of looking at something. But so I tried to find out, and in the process I got, you know, I've been given a lot of insights, and I feel very very fortunate and blessed to have gotten that. But at the same time, no, I did not get like this thing coming through. But I want to say that Astro Castalia is the name of the website. Astro and then the Castalia has that the owner of that website has helped me out with my understanding of an astrological aspect known as septiles, which is 360 divided by 7. Which is like 51, and then you can do multiples of that. And it's what she noticed was that there were that during D and Kelly's transmission, during that 6-year period, there was these very slow moving septiles among Saturn and Jupiter with some of these outer planets like Neptune and Pluto. And that seemed to be happening. And I was like, oh, this is pretty interesting. So I want to prepare anybody who may be listening to this, who is younger than I am, perhaps by a significant degree, who is maybe just learning Enochian for the first time, assuming humanity survives the next, you know, 50, 60 years. I think it's 60 years. That's kind of key. Yeah. Because there's going to be anybody who would be listening to this now who is, let's say, in their teens, it will be an old person by the time this comes up. So this is all the big wind up to the pitch, which is that the same kind of configuration is going to happen again in the early to mid 2070s. So about 50 years from now, when I will be in my 90s. Assuming I'm even still alive, you know, make sure to keep caffeine around so that, elderly Cliff can be a part of this, and I gotta take my vitamins and all that. But that's those same kinds of configurations are supposed to happen again. So get ready, folks, because, you know, while we're in the midst of climate change, there may be another transmission. So if you are into Enochian now, and are young or are learning about Enochian now, keep that in the back of your mind. You may want to start your operations up again in the, you know, let's say starting in 2070, 2071. Just check the astrology, you know, no big deal, right? Learn, you know, you can do the math, you know, 51 degrees-ish, you know, or 102. But yeah, it could happen again. So I'm personally like trying to prepare that and, you know, trying to stay in touch with with other Enochian practitioners, but that's something that, you know, I have in the back of my mind, but I think, you know, who knows, there may be another transmission.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
exciting and quite bleak also in a certain sense.
Yeah.
My mind went to, I wonder if the devastation of the planet and the end of humanity in a certain sense would bring about what the Enochian angels are trying to do in the first place. I don't know if you follow,
The literal, the exoteric apocalypse versus the esoteric one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, going through it, I think it's, I personally think that, the humans have been so self-centered for so long that this is just basically what Enochian does is it shines a mirror up to you, you know, in a lot of, or, you know, working the magical path will eventually lead you to that point. Because you really, if you want to work with the forces of reality to get what you want, eventually you have to confront the fact that you are reality. You are real. You are a real person, like it or not. And so you need to treat reality, the other parts of reality that you are also, you know, isomorphic with, or, you know, a part, other people are a part of you just as you're a part of them at a very literal level. So now we're seeing that, and now we kind of got, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to do some geoengineering. I don't know, but we'll do our best. That's all humanity can ever do.
Right. Well, thank you, Cliff. This has been fascinating. Where do you want to send people to unlock the mysteries of the universe and confront their very selves?
Very well put. Very well put. You are clearly a magician. if they want to know more about Enochian, my blog, I kind of say it's probably more geared for somebody who's a little bit past the beginner stage of Enochian, but that's not to say that you can't. I do kind of check the hits on the website, which is, people are searching for an Enochian prayer for whatever. And a lot of times it's kind of sad because it's in a war torn country or a natural disaster is coming. They want a prayer for protection like yesterday. That was the first blog post I had, was 111 prayers. But anyway, that's a long way of saying of getting, enticing people to Enochian.today, which is a nice little WordPress site. It's mainly text. I would send them there. And, if they want to deepen their practice or see how I'm just one person, other people are more advanced than me and they have their own takes on it and it's cool, but I've just put a lot of content out there. It's all free until I write the book that people, you know, joke about. You should write a book. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I have the time for that, but I'll do my best. But anyway, they can go there. If they want to reach out, they can reach out to me through that website. I think that's how you got in contact with me. Mm-hmm. And, I'll try to answer whatever questions you have. I cannot guarantee you will like the answers, but I will try to be honest and kind in the way that I answer. So that's the best I can offer.
Right. Excellent. Cool. Well, thank you for talking with me tonight.
Sure. No problem.